This is a HeadGum Original.
Evan, this week, our listeners know what song we're doing because the episode has been published, just as it does every week. This episode has the title of this song in the episode title.
Uh-huh.
But this episode is unique in that you do not know what song we are doing.
That's right. I'm clueless.
I don't know if this has ever been done before on the show. I know we haven't done it. Mm-hmm. That one of us is clueless about even what song we are doing. It's a mystery song.
I'd say it's even in the premise of the show that we both know something about the song and then we discuss it.
I'm confident you know this song. I'm confident you've heard of it. I'm confident you've heard it. But I wanted it to be a surprise.
Okay.
So just right now, go over into that Finder window, grab the song. I've retitled it Secret Punch-Up Song. And just pull it into the soundboard.
Okay.
Do you recognize the waveform just by looking at the waveform? It looks pretty flat. Can you just look at it and say, what would you guess that waveform is?
Yeah, it looks like a gentle, somewhere between a copperhead snake and a 18 hours later on Indian food kind of turd.
I think we can confidently say looking
that?
At the waveform, that this song ends with a fade, but we're not sure how it's going to begin.
Yeah.
But Evan, without any further ado...
Uh-huh.
I'm asking you, I'm daring you to press play on the secret song.
Oh, man. That's not it.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Who are you? Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Punch it. Punch it. Punch it. Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Get the party going.
You just had to get me back. You
oldest
had to
trick in the book.
Me back.
Oldest trick in the book. You said press play.
You are listening to Punch Up the Jam, the show where every week your two hosts, Andrew Gregory and Evan Gregory.
I'm one of them, but you have to guess which one I am.
The two of us listen to a song. This week, Evan doesn't know what song it is. We talk about the song, and then by the end of the episode, we're going to make an even better version of this song. I've just been trying to blitz through punch-ups because I'm about to go on paternity leave. We're recording this in April. By the end of April, I'm going to have a baby, and you'll probably hear this after I'm out of the office for a while.
You think? I hope that, the baby comes late, and we're still banging these out 2 to a week, and we're going to have 6 weeks of you on the podcast saying, I'm about to go on leave.
Oh, man. If we keep this pace up, we've been recording episodes fast and furious for the last 2 weeks. If we keep this pace up and the baby is as late as 10 days, we might make it through episode 30.
I don't know what episode this is. I can't get a sense of the scale of your boast because I don't even know what episode we're on at this point.
It's getting too confusing what episode we're even on. Is this episode even going to come out while I'm still on paternity leave or is it going to come out after I'm back? I mean, it's confusing. We need to stop. We need to stop making episodes.
That was really fast pivot. Just minutes ago, we were on pace to do 2-3 a week. Now you canceled us.
So what's stopping you, Evan? What's stopping you from pressing play on the song, the secret punch-up song, just to hear what it is?
Nothing's stopping me. I'm not scared. This is like the easiest job I've had. I didn't have to prep any audio clips.
I wouldn't let you prep.
You would let me prep.
You asked me what you could prep, and I said nothing. It's a surprise.
I love this. I'm podcasting from a hammock. I'm just relaxing. This is like vacation for me. I don't have to do anything. Ah! Come on.
It's so dumb.
Come on.
Oh, I feel youthful.
Come on.
I feel like I'm 14 years younger. It's the year 2008, and I've just had the adrenal rush of rickrolling someone.
I just can't believe I didn't see it coming. And I just didn't cross my mind to even try to guess what it was, really. There's so many songs in the world.
You're like, there are infinite songs. There's no song that is known for being a known surprise, so I wouldn't be able to think of it.
I knew there's going to be a gag, but I thought it was something about the song being secret. I don't know. I should have guessed.
You were about to be Rickrolled.
I should have guessed. I think you could have played a sample just of the one Tom hit. You know, I'll see if I can press pause quick enough so it just sounds like that. That's it. That's all I would have had to hear.
No, it's so tonal. It's so round.
Unmistakable. I know what song it is.
Yeah, that like gated reverb sound. I mean, we've been talking about so many gated reverb songs, like songs with gated reverb on the drums. And what that is a natural reverb, which would just like happen in a room if you were playing an instrument, is like there's kind of an echo, right? And like putting a reverb as a producer on something is like increasing that echo. But the 80s sound of gated reverb is as the sound continues, instead of fading off, it actually gets louder until it stops. That's a gated reverb. We've been doing so many gated reverb songs.
We've been living in the 80s when it just sort of like came in, that big beefy snare.
With Phil Collins. Phil Collins, I think, and was it Genesis brought it in first.
I don't think he personally invented it.
He might have popularized it.
Phil Collins, yeah.
I wanted to suggest to you a new motto for our podcast.
Maybe.
Punch up the jam.
What is our motto?
Making the greatest hits even greater.
That's probably on our Instagram profile or something.
But what if instead it was?
Oh, no.
If the reverb be gated, the punch up be slated.
Oh, that's gross.
You think? I thought it was good. You know, like any song with a gated reverb snare that you've heard of, it's on our slate to punch up. You don't like it?
If the reverb is gated, that motto is hated by Evan. If the podcast doesn't need a new motto, but if it did, obviously, please send us a Twitter message with your suggestions. But if it did, I think it could be, we built this podcast on rock and roll.
Wow. But all the music podcasters out there be talking about gated reverb on the snares. You got to come to Punch Up the Jam to be talking about gated reverb on toms. That's right. That gated reverb on those Rick Astley toms. Because that's the song we're talking about, Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. The song that was an enormous hit in 1987, but basically disappeared off of the map. Do you think you ever had heard this song before 2008, Evan?
I think, yeah, had heard it, sure. You know, in the 90s, it would have made it to, like, the hits of the 80s. But had it registered?
I don't think I'd ever heard it until I got Rickrolled.
I think I looked it up pre-Rickroll, in the pre-Rickroll era. I looked it up in the early 2000s because when I auditioned for American Idol, Simon Cowell compared me to Rick Astley.
I remember this. And I remember you in 2000.
Audition.
When did you audition for American Idol? Like 2002?
It took me a while. That's very like, it meant something to him. But to me, this young rube, I didn't know what he's talking about. So I had to go look it up to even understand whether he's insulting me or not.
Well, you auditioned in 2002, right?
Yeah. It was season 2 of American Idol. I tried out.
Well, what I'll say is when you repeated that story to me of Simon Cowell comparing you to Rick Astley.
Yeah, me coming home all high from the experience.
Yeah, because Simon Cowell said that what reminded him of Rick Astley about you is that the voice that came out of your mouth was not the voice that people were expecting. He didn't seem to match in Simon Cowell's brain.
Yeah, I think that's right. So he was essentially paying me a compliment, but with a Simon-esque bar. As I recall, he said something like, now you don't have quite as good a voice as he does, but you remind me of him.
Right, but at the time, it's like Simon Cowell had to do a lot of explanation of who Rick Astley was, as you did to me, because he'd fallen off the map. He had a couple major albums in the 80s. He tries to switch genres in the early 90s to like more of a soul instead of like an upbeat like Europop.
Mm-hmm.
Those don't do as well, and then he retires like... Sometimes he says it's to spend time with his family. Sometimes it's because he says that he's frustrated with the music business, and he just retires for like 10 years. So Simon Cowell is telling you that you're like Rick Astley, like 14 years after he has put out a hit record. He's not from your country. Like, he retired from the music business before he was 30. Like, he wasn't unknown quantity. And then basically, like, on the rocket that is Rickroll, like this enormous prank that becomes just like one of the biggest pranks on the internet from like 2008 until 2012.
Just massive internet meme in 2008. But why was it funny then? Because the song is so cheesy.
Yes. And it's not even, of course, in 2007 when it's first uploaded, it's not even the official Rick Astley version of Never Gonna Give You Up. Like, it's a different, like, pirated upload that just says Rickrolled. So you go there, you know you were pranked. like that video has now tapered off while Rick Astley and his label wisely in 2009 upload like the quote unquote real version. That video has 1 billion views. It's done so many views, and Rick Astley has like made a comeback where his newest albums have charted. His newest albums chart is he's like, I just really wanted to make an album about turning 50. It's like, are people interested in that? If it's not for Never Gonna Give You Up, if it's not for him rickrolling the Macy's Day Parade in 2008, he burst out of a float and sang Never Gonna Give You Up.
I love that for him. He, you know, you play fame roulette, and sometimes your number comes up on the cringy, comes up, you roll cringe.
Yes.
You know, it was a hit, and then as the culture would have it and as taste would change, he became major cringe, but just went so hard into, in the opinion of popular culture, he went so far into cheesiness and cringe that he came out the other side and became funny, and yeah, became a funny
he
meme.
He, like, passed through the flame of cringe. He passed through the desert of, like, post-cringe irrelevance and entered a paradise enjoyed by people like Susan Boyle, where they're just unironically appreciated by people from Britain that are over the age of 65.
I didn't know that Rick Astley had hit albums now, but that's great. He had this experience of being a meme, and however he can capitalize on that, I support him.
Good on him. Yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah, I also just did not realize what a hit this was in 1987. This was on the year-end chart in 11 different countries. This was an enormous hit, and I did not know that it's kind of viewed as being like one of the pinnacles of this specific songwriting team that just like ruled 80s Britain with an iron fist almost.
Okay, who's
just,
that?
They were just cranking out hits for like Kylie Minogue, for Bananarama. Donna Summer ended up going over to England and working with them, who'd been like the queen of disco in the 70s and was like, man, what these guys are doing in England is the right thing. I'm going to go over and do that. It's almost like they were taking like Europop that was happening in Germany and Italy with like really upbeat tempos and just like writing slightly better English lyrics than an Italian person could. But also like dumbing the lyrics down enough that an Italian person could still understand them. Maybe an Italian person couldn't write these lyrics, but they could be like, never gonna give you up.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, the lyrics are so simple and understandable that that is immediately an export to every country in the world. Any country, anywhere, no matter your culture, no matter your level of development, you can understand the relationship dynamic of, I am never going to give you up. I'm never going to run around and hurt you.
Yeah. No, I will say there's a lot in this song I don't understand. And a lot of that has to do with the song, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, we try to focus on the song, but for me, this song is pretty inextricable from the video, because almost 100% of the times that I have listened to the song, I'm also watching the video.
Mm.
And the video is very mysterious.
Okay.
This man in the trench coat doing a strange dance in, is it a church? Is it a warehouse? There's a bartender who's looking kind of, what's the word for it? The bartender's looking
suspect,
kind of askance. He's like, this guy's not going to be able to sing. Next thing you know, he's jumping in the air doing splits.
So what are you saying? Are you saying that, what are you saying about the video?
I'm saying that the song has a lot of unanswered questions in it. And for me, the video only deepens those unanswered questions.
Okay. I mean, the question, for example, of is this guy in the trench coat going to expose himself? Never going to give you up does have the same dynamics as a stalker would.
Yes.
Ostensibly, this is about a committed relationship, but it could also be about predation.
Yeah, and as a cynic, even if it's not about exposing yourself or predation, even if it is just a normal love song, I mean, any love song is tough for a cynic, but this song that's saying, like, you'll never disappoint someone, you'll never let them down, it's like, man, if you're married for someone for 50 years, like, that could be a very successful relationship. There's gonna be some letting down in there.
You've set your sights too high.
Yeah.
If even, perfection is the goal, you will fail.
And the legend of the creation of the song is that Rick Astley was signed, but it was determined he was too shy to be an artist yet. They were like, you've got the voice, man. He'd been a drummer. He started being a lead singer.
Rick Astley started as a drummer? Yes,
he started as a drummer.
Ooh, that's why you got those shredding toms at the top of the song.
I hope he
played it. Obviously, yeah. They're synth toms anyway, so he could have played it with just his pointer finger. But you didn't mention, who are the songwriters? Well, two famous Brits. Let me guess.
Three famous Brits.
Paul McCartney and Margaret Thatcher.
That's it. You got it. So Paul McCartney and Margaret Thatcher hire him to come to their studio basically to be like an errand boy, just so like little Rick Astley can come out of his shell.
Really?
So he can like get to know them. Yes, he's...
Oh, like, sick. So this is like an Up from the Mailroom story?
Well, I think they like already knew he was signed. It'd be like an Up from the Mailroom story if the person you're hiring to start at the mailroom is like Ari Emanuel's son. You know, and you're like, well, Ari Emanuel is the head of WME. We'll hire his son to work in the mailroom for 3 months just so he knows every part of the business. But he's not going to end up in the mailroom.
Does Rick Astley have a named dad?
No, it's not a perfect metaphor because it's not a nepotism issue, but you just heard him sing. You've already signed him to a record deal. You know eventually he will be making an album for you, but you're saying like, you know what, before we make that album, you're too shy, you're going to work in the trenches for a little bit. And Rick Astley, I found
but that
interview.
Seems insane. Like, they would never do that now. Like, you know, you signed Dua Lipa to a record deal because you've heard her and her voice is incredible, and then you go make her get coffee?
Yeah, Rick Astley was like, yes, I was making them tea. Just like walking around the studio for 3 months, just like hanging out, getting to know them, coming out of my shell. It's bizarre.
That sucks.
I wish. I think it's kind of cute.
You know what? But he didn't give him up.
He did not give them up. And at some point, he heard kind of the oldest guy of the trio is a guy named Peter Waterman. The other two guys are born in the 50s, but Peter Waterman was born in the 40s. And he starts his career, like, I think basically by, like, having a really good collection of American records. You know, like, in the 1970s in England, that's, like, good enough to have a job. You just, like, drive to some weird isolated club in northern England, and you're like, I have some records from Detroit and Chicago you've never heard. you play them all night and people love it. They ask you to come back the next week. And he noticed that in England, what really killed was the really up-tempo stuff. People wanted to dance. People wanted to cut loose.
Wow, what a hack. How was he able to unlock that one?
Unlock that secret?
People like it when the music went faster, the same pace that you might move your feet when you're dancing. They don't like these military marches.
Look, Evan, he's knighted in England, so apparently this is quite a feat for him to realize this in England. They just didn't know it.
They didn't know about fast music.
So at the same time, like, disco is blowing up in America. It crosses over to Italy, and there's like all this disco coming out of Italy that's like really, really, really fast beat, but presumably not as good at having English lyrics. So Peter Waterman and his new partners, Stock and Aitken, start writing all these kind of like derived from Italo disco songs that are also trying to crib from the Detroit and the Philadelphia sounds in America. And
so they're like an importer-exporter of music.
Yes, and Waterman had even like worked for a while in the Philadelphia music scene, had like gone overseas to like work in Philadelphia music scene, and was just like, how can we bring over this American, this quote, American sound, I think they meant black, to England with this kind of like Italian synth tempo. So Waterman's on the telephone with his girlfriend. They've been dating for a long time. They talk on the phone for a long time. He hangs up the phone, and Rick Astley says to Waterman, the legend goes,
come on,
wow, you're never going to give her up. And for Waterman, that was just like, that was it. But this is a long aside, very long aside about Stock, Aitken, Waterman, because all I'm going to say is that Waterman later gets divorced. Was he talking to the lady he got divorced from on that fateful phone call in 1987? I'm not even sure. Maybe he dumped her before he got married in 1991, but the lady he got married to in 1991, he divorced before the year 2000. The sentiment of the song as a cynic is just like, any even successful relationship, there's going to be some amount of turning around, some amount of letting down, some amount of hurting. This is an overpromise.
It's an aspiration. To say, I'm never going to give you up, you're making a promise, you might fail, and when you do, you're going to hit him in the ear with a synth tom. We're no strangers to love. I'm crazy about that as an opening line. What the hell is he talking about?
Are they no strangers to love because they love each other so much? Or is he talking about how much they dated around?
That's what I'm hearing. Admit it, we're promiscuous. We fuck around and we know what to do.
But not anymore. We're changed people.
Yeah. Because of the amount of ponds I've dipped my stick in, I now know how to behave. And I'm no rookie. I can acknowledge that this is the only oil pan for my dipstick now.
It seems, yeah, that if you think that's the message of the verse, seems very contrary to the message of the chorus. Syncopated bass line.
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I. I'm
still you know the rules.
You know the rules, and so do I. What are the rules? What are the rules, Rick? This is a little too unspoken for me. Do you know what the rules are, Evan?
We're no strangers to love.
We're no strangers to love.
Which means we have both loved a lot.
We've loved many people.
We've loved many people, and here we find ourselves. You know the rules, and so do I. No spaghetti on Saturdays.
To me, it has like an extreme kind of like Fight Club vibe of like, look, we're not going to talk about the rules.
We don't talk about
in
love.
The song, but you know them. First rule of never going to give you up. Don't tell anybody you're never going to give
up. What do you think are the relationship rules that you learn when you're not strangers to love anymore? Exactly. Maybe I haven't been in enough relationships to even know these rules.
This has gone in the exact opposite direction of another song I dislike. I think I dislike it more than this song. The Dua Lipa song about the rules. One.
New rules.
Pick up the phone. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da when you're drunk and
alone. Yeah, new rules.
That there, the rules are too explicit. It's dumb.
They listed them all.
Here, they're a little too implicit for me, but
did Dua Lipa know the rules? Do you think she knew? Did she learn the same secret rules that Rick Astley, not a stranger to love, was learning in 1987?
The
and then
rules.
Dua Lipa decided she needed new rules.
Huh.
So we might not know the old rules that are being referred to here.
Right.
We only know about the new rules.
Yeah, her rules are mostly about like late night booty calls. And I think late night booty calls existed in 1987,
mm-hmm.
but were less of a problem because of the lack of cell phones.
Yeah, no texting.
Yeah, you can't say you up. You can't just send that single message on a landline.
It has to ring. So, okay, what are the rules
yeah.
in 1987? We're deciphering. This is like a real detective problem for us to figure out. But it's the linchpin of the song. We got to know what the rules are.
You know the rules, and so do I. There's just like, honestly, like a little bit of something sinister there for me, though. Like
a little
like
bit of spycraft.
What class of person says, like, you know the rules, so do I, and then doesn't go on to say anything about the rules? And like, when I try to think through that, I think about Fight Club.
Fight Club.
I think about the Mafioso.
Yep.
I also think about the CIA.
CIA. Definitely spycraft, for
CIA,
sure.
CIA, interesting, because...
You can't say it out.
The CIA and the Navy SEALs did later use this song to drive Manuel Noriega out of hiding in the Vatican Embassy in Panama.
I'm sorry?
This is one of the songs. You know the famous psychological warfare thing where they played the music really loud? Because Manuel Noriega hated rock and roll music, and he was hiding in the Vatican Embassy.
Oh man, he'd be a great get for this podcast.
He would be, because he's dead.
The more ghosts we can get on this podcast, the better.
But this is one of those songs that they just blasted at Manuel Noriega, and he gave it up. He gave it up. He came out of
something strange, and it's Noriega.
I mean, ironic that they're playing "Never Gonna Give You Up" for Manuel Noriega, then he gives it up again. Are the rules really rules? Seems like like in love, sometimes you got those rules, then you push them, you nudge them for your own personal benefit.
We haven't even gotten to the chorus yet. We got a great potential punch up here, which is just make it clear, man. What could be better than being in a relationship where everything is clear? Your expectations and needs are clear, and therefore they can be met. Rule number one, if I'm murdering someone, you don't call the cops on me.
The murdering also really, really makes sense for me with the video, with the trench coat, the warehouse. Like, what are they doing in there? Is it like a under-the-table bar? There aren't any customers.
There's no one in this empty wedding venue. It's a place where you bring people to be killed.
Imagine if Rick Astley was in Reservoir Dogs.
Easy to imagine.
And was doing that weird dance while he cut someone up with a straight razor. It'd be so scary.
Yes, but also you wouldn't blink. Like, that fits in the movie.
Yeah, Rick Astley doing that weird little dance. I watched some interviews with people that were like, that was just the dance he did, man. He was always doing that dance.
Clearly a bad dancer. He only has the one move. He only has the one move, which looks like he's either doing a circle jerk or practicing stabbing.
But 100%, maybe the Rickroll would have popped a little bit as a meme with just the song, but it's the dance and the video that just takes it over the top to being like, world record meme in the history of YouTube.
Rule number two, the left half of the fridge is for my home pickling operation.
If by pickling I mean cocaine.
It was the 80s. If we do an 80s song and we don't make a cocaine joke, fire us. Just kidding. You don't have the authority to fire us.
If the reverb be gated, the drummer be taking that cocaine.
Oh, Lord.
I'm just kidding.
You don't have the authority to fire us. You'll have to tweet at Jake and Amir.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna run around and desert you.
Very simple promise.
Never gonna make you cry. Never gonna say goodbye. Never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
Okay. There we got it. That's the thesis.
I don't know. It's major, like, don't think about a rhinoceros energy here for me. You know, now you're thinking about a rhinoceros. Similarly, during the whole first verse, had it ever crossed my mind, like, you know what Rick Astley's going to do? Desert me. But the moment Rick Astley says, like, I'm never going to desert you, it starts crossing my mind, like, Rick Astley might desert me. He might hurt me.
Yeah, good point. The song's clearly taking place in the open phases of a relationship where everything is all sunniness and puppy love. You're always thinking the best about a relationship. When you get into something, you're like, this person is awesome and I'm walking on air. Why is this guy bothering to tell me I'll never make you cry?
In the first verse, we're already getting to like a full commitment's what I'm thinking of. So basically, like, this song is the quote-unquote talk, right? Like, he's saying, like, I want to go steady with you.
Yeah.
Then he's saying something that's insane. You wouldn't get this from any other guy.
No, literally any other guy would make this promise.
False.
Any other guy in the world would say this to get into your pants.
Yeah. Or just, like, I'm not even saying from that cynical viewpoint. I'm just saying, like, she's a nice girl. Like, if she dated around, she'd find another good guy who would want to be her steady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like only Rick Astley would ever be interested in this beautiful, smart, funny girl who can also do his dance in the warehouse. But all of a sudden, you're going from like, "Hey, want to be my girlfriend?" to be like, "I'll never desert you." Like, whoa, let's stay on the good
hey,
stuff.
Pump
let's
the brakes.
Stay on like, I really love you.
Pump the brakes, Ricardo. Six different promises of things we won't do. Give you up. Let you down. Run around, I guess, sub-promise here, desert you, make you cry, say goodbye, tell a lie, and hurt you. That's a compound promise, so total of 8.
Yeah. Baby, I'll never make you cry.
What a list.
I'm never going to say goodbye. Oh, I don't know. I don't know about this.
You're never going to say goodbye. Maybe you want to take a week off, go visit your mom.
We've known each other for so long.
Love that. That little bonus syllable.
When he belts up there.
There's a real economy of syllables in this song. Like, there's just barely any syllables, especially when you think about like in the chorus, well, every line has never gonna, never gonna. It's like, it's gonna be hard to punch up from a lyrical perspective because there's so little like...
Not a lot of real estate. Really,
yeah, not a lot of real estate. Mm-hmm. I love the way he sneaks in a little extra real estate with, your heart's been aching, but you're too shy to say it. The to say is just snuck in there. It should end on shy, but... He sneaks in and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
He should have done that every line, gotten some more words so we can make the punch up funnier.
What else do I love about this song is just the pure 80-ness of the sounds, man. Listen to the sounds that are being used on this record. That synth bass was like the first thing that jumped out at me, other than the pounding toms of the opening. Then you get this bass that I think we talked about this a week or two ago. I'm pretty sure that's the Yamaha DX7 that is on like every other hit coming out in the 80s. That's one of the bass presets. Go, 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 go.
Out of the box, baby.
Yeah, I think it's one of the out of the box presets where you just dial up that bass and it just sounds like pure 80s because you've heard it on so many songs.
But it has that really syncopated, bouncy, kind of crunchy sound against the really smooth Rick Astley vocals. It has that really syncopated feeling, and Waterman and the rest of the Stock Aitken team, that's it, that's the whole team, Waterman, Aitken, Stock.
Waterman, Aitken, Stock.
It sounds like an accountant firm.
Waterman, Aitken, and Stock.
It sounds like an accountant firm, but they were like really famous in England in the 80s. They're like comedy sketches, like making fun of their music, because they were just, every hit was a Aitken, Stock, and Waterman song. Getting the order wrong.
Like a Rodgers and Hammerstein or a Berry Gordy team or something.
Except it was like really repetitive, and they would like, they'd put out a song that they thought should be a hit with one artist, and if it wasn't a hit, they'd just like record it three more times with different artists until it was a hit. And they were just like, we knew that song is a hit, so we just kept putting it out. They kind of understood there was some randomness and like which artist looks right with it. But I think that annoyed a lot of people and annoyed a lot of critics. But they had a reference for Never Gonna Give You Up musically with a syncopated bass called Trapped, a song from the U.S. by a guy named Colonel Abrams. Here it is.
Ooh, okay.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
It has some things in common. Should I listen what you
say? The kind of syncopated feel.
I'm really into this song because I've never heard it before. It sounds really fresh.
It's pretty sweet.
What does that sound like?
But they're super trying to emulate the sound of Motown and the sound of Philadelphia. And, I mean, just in a ton of interviews of the time, something that people will say over and over again about Rick Astley is like, I heard the record, I loved it, then I saw him, and my jaw was on the floor that this is a white man. It surprised people.
His voice sounds beefy. People think it's a black artist. I want to go back and listen to this bass line on the Rick Astley bit. I'm going to... Sorry. It's funny. The Rick Astley was actually less syncopated than the reference you just played. It's bouncy. It has very similar... bounce and a lot of movement, eighth notes in the bass, boom, ba ba do ba boom. But the Rick Astley one actually lands on the strong beat more often than this tune, Trapped by Colonel Abrams. So it's sort of like they took the bounciness and got those synth sounds that were in the zeitgeist, but maybe watered it down a little bit, yeah, made it more broad.
I mean, they said, what will the Italo disco crowd be able to handle?
Is that a known term?
They needed the same tempo. They needed the same bass sound, maybe a little less syncopation.
Yeah, there really is something to the fact that people in the UK cannot dance to disco and hip-hop. If you go over there, you go to a club, like people march around like I don't know, like it's a parade.
I mean, yeah, I hate to say it, but when your national food is bangers and mash, you just... No, you need a little less syncopation in your bass line than Colonel Abrams has. You want the appearance of syncopation through the bounciness of it and the frequency of it. The bass is being played as much in the... There's a lot of notes.
Just as often. And they found that up-tempo...
Yeah.
They played this song faster.
But once you put the peas in the mash, it just kind of rounds out the bass line.
Mm-hmm.
Moves those upbeats over down to the strong beats.
Mm-hmm. You need that just a little bit blander.
So we're halfway into the song, and we've basically heard everything there is. Which I really think like helps drive the meme that like you get this far into this video, you just got Rickrolled, and now like the chorus is just happening again and again, and this inane warehouse video is going on and on. This guy in a trench coat is in an empty warehouse secretly meeting with some shady associates. Okay, we have a little bridge here.
So you're telling me we've heard all the lyrics?
We've heard all of the lyrics. We do have the little bridge here.
But there's a little bridge. Okay.
It's like barely a bridge. It's like they meant to write a bridge, and then they were just like, well, just kind of do the chorus again.
Yeah, what is it that makes the song so catchy? They unlocked a series of secret chords? Is it Rick Astley's mellifluous, beefy voice that makes people think he's like a towering, handsome black R&B singer instead of sort of like a pasty, weak-chinned Scottish guy?
And on top of all that, you have that it's blowing up internationally because they've just written the most basic lyrics ever. You can listen to this in Germany of 1987, France of 1987, Italy, South Africa in 1987, and be like, I get this 100%.
Yes. This will help me make the relationship commitment.
Yeah. Then the next thing you know, the Swedes are learning from these dangerous exports, these dangerous British exports, and turning around these very simple English lyrics back upon us English speakers.
The Swedes heard this song, and in the arms race of pop music, they learned from this and went nuclear.
Yeah, I want it that way. A dangerous sally back from the Swedes.
Yeah, after this song, what do you get? It's like a straight line to I Saw the Sign. Ace of Base.
What could be similar?
Yeah, you don't even know what the sign was.
Yeah, but same tempo. Pew, 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 pew. That's a great song.
Mm-hmm. And exact same strategy. Like, that song can go so hard internationally because everyone can understand I Saw the Sign, but it could be a sign for anything.
Space here.
This is it. This is the bridge.
Yeah, you're gonna know this.
I guess it's the bridge. Yeah, this is like kind of a sad little interlude. They didn't know what to do, really.
Yes, it's not a bridge. It's a sad interlude.
It's a sad interlude. Now we're back to verse one.
Right.
With the keyboards pulled out. Just like a little breakdown.
It's verse two. For some reason, they don't go back to verse one. But why not write a third verse? A third verse would kill here.
I don't know. One thing I love about this so-called bridge, I'm calling it a bridge because you told me to.
A sad interlude.
The sad interlude.
I prefer that.
One thing I like about it is that it felt like it was supposed to be another verse or something, because they got the backup singers in there echoing him. It's like he was supposed to be doing Never Gonna Give, and then the backup singers are echoing Give You Up, and then they just muted and deleted his part.
Yeah.
And all you're left with is the echoes.
Let them take a little solo like in Pink Floyd, you know? Just let them wail for the whole time.
Let them go on the great gig in the sky. I'm not going to play that back again. It's so funny to me. Okay, though. They just muted the Rick Astley part. Now he's ad-libbing. This is a great example of they just felt obligated to get the song out to 3.5 minutes.
This is what happens when you're on the stock Aitken Waterman assembly line. You're just like, get it out the door.
He's just pumping them out the factory, man. This is a complete filler. Complete filler. This song should have been a minute 45 seconds. I'm looking at the time code here, and it's going to run all the way out to 3:32.
It's chorus after chorus here.
Also, how many stanzas is this? We're on to like a fourth chorus now. Are we going to get a double?
Oh,
are we going to get a double right here? What happens? right back in. Nothing's even different.
Yeah.
Nothing's even. This is a straight copy paste right here.
Yeah, that's what makes it really sad is that
they're thinking about the fade here, but they haven't even done it yet.
He has this whole other chorus. He could just be singing a slightly different melody. He could be showing off his pipes. He's a great
But listen
singer.
To this. The fade has started, but it's a copy paste of a triple chorus.
Yes. Just unleash the man. Let him just really wail on the last chorus and show off his pipes.
Oh, hell yeah. Because listen to that high note. See? That's like a G sharp or something. Like, turn this man loose. Let the Astley run.
But it's just the exact same melody over and over again. But I feel like Stock, Aitken, and Waterman, that's a really specific decision from the writing perspective and producing perspective. They produce this to just be like, no, the melody, Rick. That's what the Italians like in their disco clubs. Sing it again, Rick.
Wow. To highlight my point about being disappointed that they just didn't let Rick Astley go absolutely buck wild nuts on this final chorus. While we've been sitting here talking, I'm just Googling Rick Astley singing, and I've discovered a nugget, which is that Rick Astley obviously got bored during COVID lockdown and started posting karaoke covers.
Covers after covers.
To his, look at this channel page, to his own YouTube channel. So I'm just pulling one. Here is Rick Astley singing My Girl by The Temptations. I don't need no
money, baby. Let him unleash the pipes and Never Gonna Give You Up. Rick!
I got all the riches, man.
Off a piece, Rick. Let Rick play. That's my new motto. Let Rick play.
There's two things I will say about the system he's coming out of, the Stock, Aitken, Waterman system. One is that, like, it's all about the production and the songwriting from their perspective, right? They're like, we're writing so many hit songs. They had something like 40 number one hit songs in the 80s.
What?
They're like, if this isn't a number one with Rick Astley, we'll give it to somebody else. Who cares? Just sing what we told you, Rick. And there's that mindset where, like, all of a sudden it's all about the jockey and not the horse, if you know what I'm saying. You know, drop the reins in the backstretch. Let the horse run.
Let him tear up
the turf. I know all sorts of stuff about horse racing and horse racing.
Oh, yeah,
idioms.
You know what they say. The jockey wins the derby, but the horse wins the Preakness.
Let those horseshoes clop, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, if the horseshoes are striking, then you let them sing the second chorus on the ad lib.
But the other thing I'll say is that, like, My Girl, I don't think of as being like some sort of like deep, meaningful song. I don't think of it as being a sophisticated song. I think of it as being a great song. I think of it as being a perfect song. But when you put My Girl next to Never Gonna Give You Up, you're like, wow, these are some complicated ideas. they're really thinking about dating philosophically. It's like, there's just, like, to me, a little bit more depth in the Motown writing than there is in this, like, 80s writing where they're just like, let's crank them out so the Italians understand the English, baby. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know we've talked a lot of smack about Italians' English in this, and all those Italians listening, we're not talking about how well Italians understand English now. We're talking about how well Italians understood English in 1987, and we all know that sucked absolute donkey dick.
Who are the Italians?
Yeah, they love disco and the hot tempos. They love the hot tempos. They're keeping disco alive in 1987.
The British writers learned about up-tempo disco from the Italians, wrote in that tempo.
But I'm mostly saying that they're dumbing down English lyrics to be international crossover hits. They're understanding we are not writing for an American audience. It's good to have a number one hit, which it actually was in America, but it's even better to have a number one hit in 12 European countries.
Yeah, sort of like you're making the Avengers for Beijing.
Yes. So, Evan,
have you got some ideas?
I've got some ideas. I need to know what's going on in the warehouse. I need to know why Rick Astley is so shifty about these rules and why he's so hot and cold with his lady.
Yeah.
He's warming up to her. He's saying, like, oh, maybe we could date. Maybe the two of us could be a couple. And then all of a sudden he's saying, like, I'm never going to give you up. Which also, I'm going to say, carries a little bit of an implication. You're never going to give me up. There's something a little aggressive about it.
You think he's demanding a tit for tat?
Yeah, I mean, you're like, in one sentence, you're saying like, hey, do you think we should go steady? And then in the next sentence, you're saying like, I need undying loyalty. Undying loyalty is what I'm giving to you, and I need it back from you.
Yeah, what does he say? Your heart's been aching, but you're too shy to say it, and that's why I'm stalking you. You're right, we haven't really unlocked the secret of the warehouse. In this audio-only format, we're kind of parsing the lyrics and talking about synth sounds and so forth. But you're right that in the 80s, a lot of people would have experienced this song through the vehicle of MTV. And they would have strongly associated the weird dancing and the empty wedding venue aesthetic and that one strange chain link fence with the sound of this song. So what is going on with that setting?
Why is Rick Astley hanging out in an enormous abandoned warehouse with a bunch of strange associates? And Evan, don't tell me Rick Astley's innocent. It insults my intelligence and it makes me very angry. We're back with my punch-up. Now, an eagle-eared listener? What if you're eagle-eyed but with your ear, what is it? A bat-eared listener?
Well, eagles necessarily have to see really well from, you know, 1,000 feet. They can spot a fish underwater.
Yes. But do they hear well? I don't know.
Bats, definitely super hearing.
A bat-eared listener might have heard a little clue before the break about where my punch-up was going. Did you catch it?
You dropping breadcrumbs out there?
Yeah, there's some breadcrumbs out here where I wanted to go.
I don't know. Okay, what did you talk about before the break? The warehouse. That's what I remember.
The warehouse? Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about associates?
Associates, yes.
Yeah.
And I talked about, don't tell me you're innocent, because that insults my intelligence, and it makes me very angry.
You did say that. You're quoting yourself now. Yeah, I remember this.
I'm quoting myself, but it's a quote that some may recognize.
It's the nature of trust.
Oh, no.
You know the rules, and so do I. Never talk inside or on the phone. You never know which guys are wired. And if you are double kneeling with the feds, you better understand. Better never give me up. Better never sneak around. Better go downtown. Snitch on me. Better never testify. If you do, say goodbye. Better never doubt. Been in the family for so long. You wanna get made, but you're too shy to say it. Inside this warehouse we've been wandering. No reason we can't keep getting away with it. We just simply gotta keep our traps shut. Don't tell me you've got something.
I always say that to people.
Never give me up.
Better never.
Better never sneak around. Better never go downtown. Snitch on me. Witness protection. No, I'd kill you before you go. Better never doubt I'd throw you in a ditch. Capiche?
That's utterly demented harmony. Sure, gotta keep this in.
Yeah.
Gotta keep in the sad interlude. You don't lose that.
Better never give. Better never give.
Better never give. Better never
give. Better never give. Then I'd have to shiv. Better never give me up. Better never sneak around. Better never go downtown.
That chord.
Snitch on me. Better never testify. If you do, say goodbye. Better never doubt I'd throw you in a ditch. Capiche? Better never give me up. Better never sneak around. Better never go downtown. Snitch on me. Witness protection.
I mean, one of the best improvements of this song is we faded out at the start of the second double chorus at the end.
I heard that.
Just one and a half, baby.
You
one
chopped
and a
off
half.
A whole extra chorus and spared me from another 30 minutes. But you're just talking about what we just heard. You're working from back to front. There's a lot. There's a lot to pull out of this punch up. And bravo. Well, we call this the Godfather punch.
Yeah, there's a lot, but there's also a little. When I started on this project, I was kind of like, I don't have time to do this before my maternity leave starts. And then when I started just a little work on it, I was like, there are almost no syllables in this song. Like, to complete this, like, when we did Dua Lipa's...
You mean you had to do very few words to finish it?
Yes. Like, when we were doing Dua Lipa's Levitating, and it's like... That's a single line. That's a single line.
16 syllables in one bar.
It's like, that's... If you have that many syllables, if you get that many syllables into a Rick Astley punch-up, you're halfway done with the song already. And it's like there were some difficulties in being spare. Like, how do I get across some of these mob ideas in like four syllables in the chorus? Once I hit on "Better Never Give Me Up," then mm-hmm. you only have a couple things to say. But it's like if you can find the economy of syllables to do it, it's like you're going to finish this pretty quickly, my friend.
You're really giving away the secret sauce on this one. Giving us a look behind the curtain.
Punch up songs with fewer syllables. That's how we can get through this faster.
Well, it's definitely punched up. I mean, you unlocked a lot of secrets here. I think you revealed a lot about who Rick Astley really is.
What
Clearly
are the
a monster.
Rules? What are the rules?
If we can't talk about what these rules are, but we both know the rules,
yeah.
We are mobsters.
Some of the rules are now spoken. Don't talk inside in a car. You never know who's wired. But you know, there's other rules that are still unspoken beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Like who you got to respect.
Yep.
That's
you
Rick
don't
Astley.
Order from Sal's. You always order from Carmine's. But you don't look at Carmine's wife.
Yeah, I went through a couple mixes of this with our producer, Alex Foote. Who was bringing in all the Godfather theme song stuff.
Well, that's what we didn't talk about yet.
And just every time I was like, more mandolin! More mandolin! Bring in more mandolin!
And that caused you, that backed you into this harmonic corner in the chorus where you had to introduce a new chord because you were fixated on having this musical reference to the Godfather film theme.
Yes. But I also
I loved it because that introduced a new chord where the original like only had the three chords.
I was fixated
only
on
had the four, five, six, and one.
Sticking with the Godfather theme, but I was also fixated on absolutely being loyal to the rhythm. For me, this song is all about the rhythm, not just the gated tom intro. Again, this is the only podcast that doesn't just talk about gated snares, but gated toms. But also the never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down. I was like, I've got to land there. I can't add any syllables. I can't subtract a syllable and have something other than da-da-da-da. So for me, I really felt like I'd unlocked it when I hit on Better Never. It's almost too rhymey, but it's all about the rhythm there.
Well, I don't care about the number of syllables. I care about how you've flipped the theme of the song from the person pledging loyalty to a threat.
A person demanding loyalty.
Demanding loyalty. You said it was implied in the original song.
But Evan, they're only demanding loyalty because they give loyalty.
There is a version of this punch-up somewhere, not that actually exists, but I just think, honestly, our listeners should be thanking their lucky stars that I did not sing this in a Marlon Brando impression. There's definitely a version where I'm just going like, better never give you up. That is my Marlon Brando impression, clearly terrible, and I'm glad I didn't make you suffer through that. Honestly, I'm pretty pleased with how my Rick Astley impression turned out. I thought it was pretty good. Honestly, at the end of like episode 40, maybe episode 50, we should do like a flashback of all the impressions we've had to do. Maybe like over Sarah McLachlan's Arms of the Angel. Like, you did a really solid Orbison. I'm pretty pleased with my Astley. I was really pleased with my Tom Petty.
Now I've forgotten them. At this point, I've forgotten all the things that we've already done. They were just whisked away into the past as we blast forward to each week's episode. I forgot that in week one I did a Bono until just now reminded me of it.
I'll also say my Grace Slick was not actually a good Grace Slick impression because I am a man, but I was really pleased with the way I differentiated my Grace Slick from my Mickey Thomas when we were doing We Built the City.
A subtlety that may be lost on the layperson.
A breathiness. Grace Slick just has a lot of wind in her voice.
But you got that throaty warble, that belty throaty warble of Rick Astley.
Yeah, throaty warble. I like that. It's kind of like it's all in the back of your throat. Like none of it is in the front of your mouth. But at the same time, there's something fun happening. You got to be having fun while you're doing it.
You have to have a British posture, but the throat the size of a drain pipe. It sounded like a joke. It was not really a joke.
Now, I will say that while I was singing this at the top of my lungs in my apartment and listening to the song over and over again in my apartment, a maintenance person from my co-op building, we've dozens of maintenance men because it's a really big co-op here in New York City, was in my apartment installing window guards. And I'm just blasting a Rick Astley song and singing this at the top of my lungs, like rushing to get it done.
The need was too urgent. You could not stop singing, even as these workmen are banging away on an iron grate.
Well, a man named George is installing window grates two rooms away. And as he was leaving, I was like, George, like, I just need to explain myself. Like, I don't really love that song this much. Like, I do this radio show thing, and we talk about songs.
You didn't even use the word podcast.
No, I did not. George was a man in his 50s or 60s. I thought, I don't know if George knows what podcast is. Maybe that's wrong of me to think he wouldn't.
You assumed. You made an ass out of you and Med.
But George was kind of like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm not sure if he believed me. But when I tipped him as he was leaving, I was like, George, like, I don't want anyone in the maintenance office. I don't want Eddie. I don't want any of the other maintenance guys knowing how much I like Rick Astley. We got to keep this between me and you, George. I said it as a joke, and I got a laugh. George understood the humor of the situation that I'm just screaming Rick Astley.
You told him that you better never give you up.
You're right. You're right. Honest, but I hope he turns on me. I hope that the next time I talk to Eddie, the head maintenance guy, Eddie's like, I heard you really like Rick Astley, man.
That's too many layers, man. You were singing a song about threatening, then you threatened him and tipped him, and now you expect him to go against that.
As part of a joke
and share
that
it.
He might not truly understand.
And you want the other guys to know about it, even though you said the opposite, and you want them to come up and say, wow.
I mean, what I'm starting to sound like is some sort of mob consigliere who expects a lot of people to understand a lot of unwritten rules that they might not understand. It's too much, too many layers.
The second the Godfather theme hit in those opening bars, I was won over. This song has been punched up.
And when a song is punched up, apparently Evan slappas the bass. How do you conjugate that verb? Evan slappas the bass?
It's like the word fish, where when it's plural, it's still fish. I slap at a bass, you slap at a bass, he slap at a bass,
Evan
we
slap
at a bass.
All right. Okay.
There's only one conjugation when you slap at a bass. Each week after we've victoriously punched up an extremely famous song, we have a little cool down period where we think about a different song for just a few moments and clear our minds, and we call it walk-in music. What is your walk-in in music? This Ooh. Week, a week in which you have surprised me so many times, Andrew, what are you bringing in?
Ooh, I am bringing in a song. My scenario, I just want to be going out over to my friend's house and mm-hmm. hanging out, but they have a backyard with a wraparound porch.
Ooh,
and they have like
hangout walk-in.
And they have a couch on their back porch that's like seen better days, but still good enough to sit in, mm-hmm. sit on. And we're just there all day. I know this sounds extremely normcore to everyone, but I just want to remind everyone we do live in New York City, and just like the idea of being in like a backyard for an undefined period of time just hanging out, it's like actually quite magical and mystical to me, and sends me back to a different time. Dare I say a time in the 1990s when this song might have come on the radio.
Wow.
This is a nostalgia pick for me, you know? What was I doing in 1995? It's a nostalgia pick, but it's also another YouTube meme pick. This is
I think of this song as being called What's Going On, but it's actually called What's Up.
Exactly. It's What's Up by Four Non Blondes. And honestly, I might have missed it in the 90s. For me, it was all about the He-Man meme on YouTube, which I still know and love. But the He-Man meme crossed over for me, and now I just love the song.
And now you just legit love this song.
But the song, even though I learned of it in the 2010s, is just so of a moment that you hear it and you just want to be in someone's backyard in 1997.
Even if you weren't alive then, you'd still want to go to a 90s backyard. And now you, as a New York City man, living in an apartment on the 9th floor.
I had to put window guards in, for God's sake.
You want to go to that small town backyard. You want to sit on the really grungy couch that smells like old rain and farts. Yeah,
everybody's drinking Rolling Rocks. Maybe somebody starts a fire.
Hey, what's up, Steve? Hey, Walter. Hey, Anna.
Mm. Love it.
I'm going down to Sam Goody and shop for some CDs later. You guys want to come? I can fit five if we open the hatchback. It's a great nostalgia pick, man. What's Up by Four Non Blondes.
What's your pick this week, Evan?
Okay, my scenario is, I kind of had a reach this week. I really couldn't come up with something, so I tried to think of a real-life scenario I had been in to get inspired.
Okay.
And I had an exciting incident of, let's call it pedestrian road rage, a week or two ago. I was out on a date with my wife, and we're walking home through Brooklyn, and we came to this intersection that I know to be a somewhat unsafe one, having passed through there many times. So I just happened to...
What intersection?
Marcy and Metropolitan.
Oh, I was almost run over by an 18-wheeler in that intersection one time.
Yes, it sucks because there are these two lanes of traffic making a left that are going to enter the interstate there, and they get too excited before the interstate. They start getting going really fast, and they're not looking. And there's also an odd rhythm of the stoplights there. Anyway, I sort of knew that to be the case, so I'm already like a little bit heads up as we cross. We have the green line. I even waited an extra beat to be safe. And as I look up, here comes this driver who made a very, very unsafe, aggressive choice and made a left across stopped traffic on his red light. So there's like three or four very bad choices being made.
So he's turning from like three lanes over. He's not turning from the left turn lane. He's turning from the right turn lane left.
He's turning left from the middle lane.
Okay.
When all the lanes have a red.
Oh, no.
Directly towards me and my wife in a crosswalk. And he's just coming straight at us.
And as previously discussed, your wife is 9 months pregnant with my and my wife's biological child. This is terrible.
A complication that
certainly the driver was unaware of. He could have known she was pregnant. It's unlikely he would have guessed she's pregnant with her sister-in-law and brother-in-law's biological child.
That maybe is a bridge too far to think, to think that he could have guessed that in one glance, especially in the self-centered state in which he's making this choice. Anyway, this car is barreling toward me, and the smart move would have been to leap aside and go to safety. But for some reason, I think because I'm near my wife and all this stuff, for some reason, some kind of Papa Bear thing in me snapped. And I just started walking straight towards his car.
What?
That was driving straight at me. I looked at him right in the eyes. I started screaming at him with such deafening volume. I think it had a little bit to do with me anticipating how unsafe this intersection was. I was so angry at him for doing this. It was truly a crazy thing for me to do. Anyway, he stopped.
You could have died.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have. He stopped, and I came around to the driver's side door. Like, what was I going to do here? And what I wish had happened is that he rolled down the window, and then this song played.
I'm guessing this is not what happened.
And in my walk-in version, Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny plays. And we look at each other, and he says, "Sorry, man. It's really late. I just wasn't thinking. I made a really bad choice. But I'm glad you called me out. I'm really going to think about things. And I'll look at him and I'll say, man, It's all good. You got my heart rate up. Even retelling this story, my adrenaline is pumping right now. But I forgive you. We're all just trying to get where we're going. Let's look out for each other. Let's stay safe. Have a good one, man. And he would roll up his window and drive very slowly and cautiously away.
Right onto the BQE.
That's my real life scenario, and I wish I had Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny to walk into my crosswalk confrontation.
It's interesting because I feel like in the Reservoir Dogs version of the Rick Astley song, that's the song that Rick Astley plays while he slices someone's face up with a razor blade.
Yeah, I went the other way. I'd like to go more nonviolent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the right inclination.
That was our walking in music. That's a keeper.
Wow.
That's fire.
Rick Astley the mobster. Hell yeah. We uncovered it. All the secrets in his music. Those, you got to read between the lines to see what he's really saying.
I'm going to make you an offer you can never give up.
I'm never going to give you up, and I expect the same. This has been Punch Up the Jam.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
As always, all the punches you can listen to and get every punch up from the show at patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. You can follow the show at Punch Up the Jam on Instagram or Twitter. There is a subreddit if that's your thing. And you can follow me at @AroseGregory.
You can follow me at @GetSomeEvan. We'll see you back here next week. Please don't give us up. Please don't let us down. Or we'll make you an offer that you can't refuse. Meaning we'll murder you. Get back here, we'll kill you.
First, they gave me up. Then they turned around. Then they pulled me back in.
That was a HeadGum Original.